We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
It's time for Sports Night with Bonnie Jill Laughlin on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome to the debut of Sports Night with Bonnie Jill Laughlin, and I'm Bonnie Jill Laughlin. Technically, I should say my second show, as I did one on Radio Row at Super Bowl in Los Angeles. And I'm happy to be on Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, and I'm going to be joined by Todd Lebo, the VP of Sports Operations. Todd, thanks for joining me and getting me started on my first show.
Absolutely. Glad to have you. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know you've helped us out on Radio Row before, and that was a lot of fun out in Los Angeles. Like the first year back with kind of a regular Radio Row, not quite what it was in the past, but certainly more folks that were there 2 years ago. And it's always a lot of fun. And you got some shows done for us out there, and we're going to have you doing some of these shows here in the evenings on Sports Radio 810 WHB, because it's we always love new voices and give people different perspectives of what's going on with sports. So welcome to Kansas City, as it were.
Absolutely. I had so much fun with your crew in Los Angeles, a blast. And like you said, it was basically back to normal. It was great to see, you know, just the buzz and the energy of Los Angeles and Super Bowl. And it was fantastic. And I love being a part of this network. I mean, it's fantastic. It's such a classy crew, and I can't ask for anything more.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. We have fun. Listen, it's Kansas City. We love our sports. We love our Chiefs. We love our Royals. And we got good college fights around here with Kansas and Missouri and K-State. So we love it. We really do. It's a lot of fun. And I think we should probably start a little bit about you. You've got a varied background of lots of different sports things and acting and all kinds of stuff. How would you describe what your career has been like so far and where you've gotten to where you are right now?
That's funny you say that, Todd, because I do have a lot of layers. In my career starting, I'll make it quick, but, you know, I started in the NBA as a Golden State Warriors cheerleader, then went on to the San Francisco 49ers, then to the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, and was, you know, honored to be on that team, and then go on to the sports world, as you can say. I got my degree in broadcast journalism at University of Texas. I know that's a little bit of I'm in talk about enemy territory. Mm-hmm. and then was able to just, you know, go on into my sports world, and was a sports reporter for NFL Network, for CBS, NBC, and then was able to start my career with the Los Angeles Lakers, and was the first and only female scout in the NBA for the Lakers. Was with them for 13 years and got 5 rings. And now back into my sports broadcasting world, and I'm working for CBS Sports and with you fine folks.
That's a lot of fun, man. I mean, that's a lot of different things you've done. It's pretty amazing to be a part of that Lakers franchise, because it's one of the most storied ones ever, right? And you've 5 rings. It's like pretty crazy that's where it went. And they got one a few years ago. It's not going so great for them right now. But, hey, they'll be back at some point, right? I guess. I mean, the Lakers never stay gone long, do they?
They don't, Todd, but there is always drama in the offseason, right? The Cowboys and the Lakers, they're just notorious for offseason drama, and I guess that makes them who they are. But, yeah, it's crazy to see that they didn't even make the playoffs. I mean, Dr. Buss is rolling in his grave right now to see the team on paper, how great they looked at the beginning of the season and couldn't even get it done. So we'll see if they're able to get, you know, get things back, get a coach is what they need, and see where they're at. But that'd be nice, right, to get a coach first. But I know they're always looking for a Laker. They always want a coach that has some ties to the Laker organization, which sometimes, Todd, as you know, you don't need that. That doesn't always work.
No, it doesn't. Sometimes it feels like that's what you should do. You know, you mentioned University of Texas. I went to University of Oklahoma. That's how it is. Okay, we're going to be okay here. That's fine. But, like, you know, Oklahoma just went through a head coaching search with Brent Venables when Lincoln Riley went out to L.A. to coach USC, and everyone was like, they got to get someone who went to Oklahoma or whatever. But Brent Venables didn't go to Oklahoma, but he was part of what they built, and they liked that familiarity. But Lincoln Riley didn't have anything to do with anything before he came there, and he was great. And Bob Stoops had never set foot on campus before he got there, and it was great. And, like, probably when you were in college, after I was out of school, they hired John Blake, to coach at Oklahoma because he played for Barry Switzer, and it was the worst thing there ever was. So you can't just hire someone because they're part of your party. You know what I mean? You got to go get the right person for the job, no matter what your sport is. And that's just the smart way to go about doing it, because it doesn't work. The right person is the right person, no matter where they came from.
Absolutely. And sometimes some of these hires seem forced, right? And that's the thing that I have a problem with the Lakers, is that, you know, it's forced sometimes. It's getting a player or, you know, like I said, some type of tie, and it doesn't work. And, you know, Frank Vogel was their first choice. And looking back, you know, if they really did want a tie, and it would have worked out great, was Tyronn Lue, right? And instead they passed on him, and look. Big mistake, right, Todd?
It happens. And Tyronn Lue, Kansas City kid, see? We love him. We love him.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, he went to high school at Raytown High, and it's just amazing to see what he's done in his career as a player and a coach, because he was an undersized guy at, you know, at Raytown, right, not 10 minutes from our station right here. I love when things are going well for him, but hey, you know, sometimes someone, I sometimes can't tell with the Lakers who's hiring the coach. Is it the organization or is LeBron in charge? I don't know, you know.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because LeBron is definitely pulling a lot of the weight. People don't want to hear that, but that is true. And Jeannie Buss has also given the reins to Kurt Rambis. I don't know if you remember that name. Kurt Rambis and his wife, Linda Rambis, are pulling a lot. And the report is true, Todd, that Phil Jackson is now going to be helping conduct some of the coaching searches. So that's pretty... makes Laker fans, some Laker fans happy and some kind of... you know, get nightmares. So we'll see how that works.
Yeah, what'll make them happy is winning games again and not watching the playoffs, you know, because the playoffs have been pretty good and the Lakers are almost always a part of it, and they don't like not being a part of it.
Yes, absolutely. And I don't know if you've been watching some of these playoffs, but I wanted to kind of go over some of the scores last night, where 99-90, the Heat advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals, and then a blowout, which is funny because the Suns have blown out the Mavs in game five, but Mavs 113, Suns 86.
Yeah, pretty bad. You know, the Mavs needed it, obviously, because they were going to be toast if they didn't win it. Looks like the Suns kind of just said, all right, we lost this one. Let's go win game seven. You know, that series has been a lot of fun. Stars, you know, young stars, the people aren't as used to seeing, right? And that's what the playoffs is kind of about this year, because you don't have, you know, LeBron in there. Now, you still got some guys, right? I mean, obviously Steph Curry and is a major part of this stuff, but Luka is a rising star. That's good. I mean, the Suns almost got it done last year. Devin Booker's amazing. So I think it's pretty fun to watch these things happen. And you're right, though. We've had some really kind of good games, but this last week we've had some 30- and 40-point kind of blowouts. You're like, okay. Sometimes that happens in a playoff. So if you know you're not going to win this one, you got to rest a little bit, get ready for the next one. And I think you see that occasionally. People in Philly are certainly disappointed that this is the way it ended for them. But, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, I think that thing's been a bit of a mess. I don't think I would have James Harden near my team, but that's just me. I don't know. It's not my cup of tea. But, you know, Embiid, people around here love Embiid because he went to KU, and he's turned into an amazing player. But I don't – and the Heat are just a team. They just – they're not full of stars. They're just gutty and tough. And I think we got to give some – credit to Eric Spoelstra. People probably forget that he's been there all that time, right? He's won with lots of groups of people. He's a heck of a coach, man, to do what he's done with this crew.
Yeah, I love him. It's funny you mentioned him, because and you look at his career starting out as a video scout and getting the respect of the players. The fans love him, like longevity, all the different personalities of players that he's had to you know, coach, and he's just been phenomenal. He just sticks, right? There's something that just works, and Jimmy Butler loves him, and he doesn't love, you know, everyone as we know. So that's worked, and I have a lot of respect for Coach Spoelstra.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, because he was like, just it seemed like he was the guy who was just there when LeBron and D-Wade and Bosch were doing their thing, but he's more than that for sure. You know, he wasn't just along for the ride, because he's still there, and he's taken the team back to the finals and done that, and like, you know, like you said, I mean, Jimmy Butler's a great player, but he's not one of the stars of the league, and they're not loaded with like a trio, right? Everyone wants to get two or three guys who are really, really good. Man, he's just got some guys, and they really play their butts off for him.
No, they absolutely do. And I want to touch on a little bit what you said about James Harden. Isn't that something? You know, I've always said that, you know, James Harden, and I'm going to throw in Russell Westbrook in as well. Those are the guys, and I know this is a hard label, but I call them cancers. You know, wherever they go, there tends to be, you know, it doesn't work. The chemistry doesn't work. I mean, it happened in OKC with the Rockets, the Nets, and now the Sixers with Harden. And look at Russell Westbrook with the Lakers. There's something there, Todd, and maybe you can expand on it a little bit, that it doesn't work. Those players, it's like they just can't gel with, you know, the four other guys on the court.
And when they were young, it seemed to work, right? In Oklahoma City, mm-hmm. that little core of guys made it to the finals. And then it's like, oh, well, everyone wants, I want to be the man. I want more money. And then they go somewhere. And listen, they've all made so much money. It's so much money that they can never worry about anything for generations. But they just seem to not understand what it's like to go win and like maybe enjoy the game. Because it doesn't look like James Harden enjoys the game much anymore. To me, you know, when you watch him play, and Westbrook, I wouldn't have anywhere near my team either. You're right. I mean, you hate to label someone as a cancer on a team, but it's like that. It's like kind of, we've seen that Carmelo Anthony was probably that way at the end of his career.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you're making all the dough. Why would you give someone all this money to come play for your team when they seem pretty selfish is the word. And that doesn't work. When you watch a team like the Heat play, there's some guys out there playing hard, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of fighting about, you know, who's going to get the points or whatever. And for me, that works better. I know the NBA loves their stars. They love how many followers they have on Instagram or Twitter and the drama and all that kind of stuff. But that doesn't win games, you know. I mean, the Bucks won this thing last year. I mean, Giannis is awesome. I mean, he's a superstar. But they didn't have three other superstars running around on that team. You know, they had a bunch of guys going out and getting it done. And I think that may be the way to do it, because these superstar teams, you know, the Lakers are a prime example. There was injuries and stuff like that. And they're getting older. But how could you look at paper and say LeBron and AD and Westbrook, who are all superstars and top 75 players or whatever in the history, and they're not going to win? Well, it didn't work. It didn't gel. And that's personalities as much as anything.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's these super teams. They, you know, it worked with the Golden State Warriors, and I think that has to do with ego. If you look at, you know, Steph and Clay, Draymond at one point, but you know, the egos plays a big part of it. And you look at the super teams, and it worked for the Golden State Warriors. But then you look at the Lakers, and you said, you look at it on paper, and you go, oh, this team's, you know, you go buy your, you know, championship T-shirt right now, because they're going to win it all. But it's something happening where there's not enough balls on the court. I like to say the egos. It's off the court, that they're fighting for, you know, attention, the money, who's getting paid more. It's not even about the love of the game anymore, which is, you know, pretty sad. But you start to look at a Russell Westbrook and a James Harden, and like you said, Carmelo Anthony, and it's them. You know, some people try to say, you try to blame other people, but you have to start narrowing in on it's there. They seem to be the problem. And LeBron had said at the beginning of the season, hey, Russell, come on over and let's win a ring. They didn't even get to the playoffs, Todd. Yeah. They didn't even get to the play-in.
Well, LeBron feels like he can just do things, and I think LeBron needs to look in the mirror sometime and say, because I think LeBron in his heart of hearts probably knew that this isn't the perfect guy. He thinks he can get people in and control them. Well, no, some people are uncontrollable, and I think Russell's one of those guys.
And it's sad because he's such a phenomenal player, you know, and and same thing with James Harden. I mean, phenomenal player. And, I followed him since he was at Arizona. It's just, you start to see this transcend of how these players, their game evolves, and it's not evolving in the right direction.
No, it's not. And I would say it's sad to see, but I don't feel bad for these guys. They've all gotten a ton of money, and, you know, they've had success, but they're not going to sit down with like 10 rings or anything like that when you think they would, but. Not everyone can win. There's only one ring each year, you know? Only one ring each year. Even the great, like, you know, with the Lakers back in the day, with Kobe and Shaq, it was great for a while, but then it wasn't. It was great till it wasn't. And then they had to break that thing up, you know? And we just don't see, and this is good for the players, you know, free agency, and they can go and choose and pick where they go. You're not going to see anyone, this group of players, stick together for 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 years like you used to see back in the past. We kind of see it a little bit with the Warriors. I mean, I think Clay and Steph have kind of hung together, and Draymond, but it's been other people in and out. And there is something about the culture they've built there where the guy – and they had to work all through all those injuries, and that's why they probably haven't won other rings, because they were hurt so much. But if you get those guys who want to stick around, Now, if you have an organization who can pay in that in a city where they want to live and all that, that's the tough part about like Oklahoma City where all those guys were. Well, those guys didn't want to live in Oklahoma City. You know, I mean, simple as that. And that's bad for small market teams that everyone wants to go to Miami or L.A. or San Francisco. I mean, New York keeps trying. It doesn't work. But, I mean, how long will it be like this in Milwaukee? Giannis seems to be content. He signed his max deal in Milwaukee. But will Milwaukee attract others? I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting you say that, but it is about the egos and it's about their personal brand. So you definitely nailed it there. Before we go to break, I do want to talk to you about the NFL releasing their 2022 season schedule. And I want you to tell me the Chiefs schedule and break down that a little bit. I mean, the game that I thought was the most appealing was Chiefs in San Francisco. Todd, what's your thoughts?
That's a big one for sure. They have a lot of big ones. Their first eight games are against teams that had winning records last year. Now, their schedule's really hard when you look at, like, just on wins last year. But that's going to be the case, just the way the thing works. But all those teams are playing the Chiefs as well, and the Chiefs have been great for, like, 4 or 5 years in a row. They have four straight AFC Championship games, hosted all that stuff. So all those teams all have to play the Chiefs. But it looks like a bear early. Their road games are at Arizona, at the Colts, at Tampa. Everyone's fired up about that one. In that game at San Francisco, you mentioned that's their first four road games. That's a playoff team, and the Colts are a team that blew their chance to go to the playoffs somehow last year by losing to Jacksonville. And Tampa, obviously, is a playoff team, and San Francisco probably should have been in the Super Bowl, you know, if they would have caught an interception at the end. So it is a tough, tough, tough schedule early for the Chiefs. But people are buying tickets already. Last night, everyone was on, because Chiefs fans love to travel, and there will be a bunch of them out in San Francisco. They were all buying tickets last night, airline tickets, trying to find out the best way to get there, because they love to go watch their team on the road. It's kind of like a college thing with them now. It's turned into a deal. This is a huge thing in Kansas City. It's maybe not the biggest thing all around the country, but Chiefs fans are fired up to go anywhere. They were all looking when the Vegas trip is. They want to know that one, because everyone wants to go to Vegas. That's not till late in the year, but people will definitely be going to I wish the Arizona one was later in the year, too. Who wants to go to Arizona when it's 150 degrees? Why can't that thing be in December? But it is what it is. They'll be out in San Francisco in force in October on the 23rd, though. I promise you that.
Oh, yeah. Chiefs Nation, they are impressive. They go everywhere. You see that sea of red. And so I'm not surprised that they're already booking their tickets. And I'm excited, Todd, to get out to KC and come out for the home opener, because that is going to be so much fun, because you are going to die when you hear this. But I've never been to Arrowhead.
Oh, well, we got to fix that right away. It's going to be wild. It's one of the most fun places to watch the game. I tell people it's as close to a college atmosphere as you'll find in the NFL. And there are great college atmospheres all around the country. This is as close as you can get. This Green Bay kind of feels that way. Buffalo's getting back to that way, right? Because those fans are so crazy. But Arrowhead is a lot of fun. And that home opener is going to be great. Chargers in town for Thursday Night Football. People will be fired up. The parking lots will be full by noon. And the smoke will be thick in the air of barbecue at Arrowhead that day, getting ready for Chiefs fans hoping to go 2-0 against the Chargers after they hope to go out and win in Arizona.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting, because there's only five stadiums I haven't been to, and Arrowhead is one of them. I've been to Kauffman, but I have not been to Arrowhead. So I'm looking forward to that. Thanks, Todd, so much for joining me. When we come back, we're going to have Arash Markazi from ESPN in Southern California and Brian Corner, Santa Anita trainer and Breeders' Cup winner, is going to break down the Kentucky Derby and the new news of the Derby. All coming up next on Sports Night. I'm Bonnie Jo Laughlin on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
By Paul, but Luka gets it on the drive all the way to the rim for the dunk with two hands. They're able to turn that tight corner, and there was no help at the rim for Phoenix.
I like when people trash talk to me. It gets me going. You know, it's fun, man. It's basketball. There's going to be a lot of trash talking, and I like it. It's fun for me. It's competitive basketball, and I like it. It's fun for me.
That was Luka Doncic post game after the Mavericks force a game 7, 113-86, crushing the Phoenix Suns. Now joining me, my good friend Arash Markazi, host of the Arash Markazi Show on ESPN in Southern California, and formerly LA Times and Sports Illustrated. Arash, let's talk some NBA playoffs.
This is a fun time, Bonnie Jill. Unfortunately, not in Los Angeles. No Lakers, no Clippers, but we got a great postseason happening here.
Yes. Now, Luka, the four-year superstar, is already building, I think, one of the greatest resumes in NBA history, playing in 22 postseason games. Arashan scored 30 or more points in 13 of them. I mean, he seems to thrive when his back is against the wall. Arash, what can you say about Luka's performance and takeaways from this series?
This has been such a fantastic series, and what the Suns have really done here, they've put themselves in a very precarious position, because you touched on it. Luka's really putting himself kind of in that conversation for when you talk about the best player. You're talking about Giannis, obviously, the Joker. Luka is in that conversation, and now that we have a Game 7 situation, who knows what could happen? You know, there's like, usually a turning point moment, like when LeBron played the Pistons, you know, in the third or fourth year, that was the moment where he became like the best player. Luka could have that game where Game 7, no one's expecting the Mavericks to go into Phoenix and win that game. He's got that fit factor. He's got that gamer mentality. And I am so fascinated to see what Luka Doncic will do now in a Game 7.
Now, Rosh, I could talk to you all day about NBA playoffs, but I want to talk now going into the other series. Philadelphia Sixers were eliminated by the Heat, and Joel Embiid, I don't know if you saw this, Rosh, says James Harden needed to be more aggressive, and he isn't the same player as he was in Houston. I mean, we kind of know that it seems that James Harden can't get the job done. Where does Philly go from here, and do you agree with Joel's statements?
100%. I mean, I think if you were in Philadelphia and you thought you were getting Houston James Harden, you were sadly mistaken. And now, Bonnie Jill, what we have is a situation with James Harden where he quit on Houston, he quit on Brooklyn, and it effectively looks in the second half like he quit on the Philadelphia 76ers. So they're at a crossroads right now where do they bring Doc Rivers back? Do they change the coach? What do they do with James Harden? I mean, here's the thing about James Harden. James Harden is for sure coming back next year. He's making $47 million. He's going to be a part of that team. Can they move him? Because I don't think when Joel Embiid said what he said, puts himself in a really tough position with James Harden where can those guys coexist? So as good as they are or as good as they were, they've hit a ceiling, I think.
I was talking about this earlier. It's hard to label James Harden, Russell Westbrook, you even throw in Carmelo in there as a cancer, but that label's starting to stick with them. What is the problem with these players? Is it the egos? Is it the money? Is it not for the love of the game? What is wrong and what has happened with James Harden? Let's just point him out in his career.
So with James, I think the problem is he is clearly not the same player he was in Houston. And what was he in Houston? He was the most valuable player in the league. Mm-hmm. He was one of the top five players in the league. He still believes in his heart of hearts that he is that player. Same with Russell Westbrook. That's the way that they play. And the fact of the matter is they're not there anymore. Not only are they not most valuable player of the year candidates, I don't view them as top 10, top 15 players. But the question is, if they had a change of scenery, would that help? As crazy as this is, and I haven't heard it even being talked about, but if you did a Harden for Westbrook trade, crazy as it may sound, do you think perhaps it's a change of scenery with those two guys? I mean, the problem with those two guys is that they're making way too much money to trade them to teams. The good news for Philadelphia and the Lakers with both of those guys, they are in contract years. This is the final year of really bad contract, so they really can't move right now.
Yeah, I want to talk about, you know, going back to the series with the Mavericks and the Suns, a little bit off the court. During the past three seasons, Raj, I think we've seen a tremendous upsurge of fans, violence towards the players, and now the families are at risk. Watching what happened in the past week with Chris Paul's family and the Mavericks fan during Game 4, I'm sure you saw that. What does the NBA need to do to stop this problem? Because it is becoming a serious problem, Arash.
It's a great question, because here's the thing. You cannot just say we're going to suspend that fan for, you know, a couple of games or just one season. I really do believe this needs to be a league-wide thing. If you behave in a way that puts a player or their family in danger, or at least they perceive it to be that way, you're not only suspended for life from that facility, but across the league. This needs to be a league-wide thing where you are really put in a position where you're not going to do anything crazy. I mean, just to take it away from sports here in Los Angeles, when you had a spectator come on stage while Dave Chappelle, had a show, I was really upset that they did not charge that person. I mean, you need to really make it so no one thinks about touching a player's family. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, Ross, shifting gears, let's move on to the Lakers, the team that you and I became good friends. First off, let's start with the Lakers not making the playoffs, not even the play-in game. What is the biggest obstacle that they will have to overgrow to become a playoff contender? Like, I'm setting the bar low at even saying playoffs, but what do they need to do?
You know, we touched on Russell Westbrook. What do they have to do to move that contract? Because he cannot come back to this team. I don't want to say he's a cancer. I mean, I really think that's the extreme. He does not fit in. He does not fit with this team. It does not work. The problem now, they put themselves in a position with this contract where if you want to move him and you want to get something back, they got to package him plus two first-round picks, plus maybe a young player like Talen Horton-Tucker, who's 21 years old, fantastic young player. So they essentially have to package the number one picks if you call THT a first-round guy, just to move him. I think you almost have to do that. Why? Because you got LeBron James and you got Anthony Davis effectively still in position, I think, if they're healthy, and a huge if there. If they're healthy, you do have the core of a contender. That Russell Westbrook trade is just now we're seeing, and we saw at the beginning of the season, and it really proved out that way, what a disastrous trade that was.
Yeah, it does seem like they have a lot to overcome. But I know the Lakers will always bounce back. And keeping with the Lakers theme here, my understanding is Phil Jackson is back, and he'll be consulting on the hiring of the new Lakers coach, as well as Jeannie, Linda Rambis, Kurt Rambis. I think Palinka's in there at some point. But have you heard any possible candidates besides, I know Kenny Atkinson is in there, Warriors assistant. I'm also hearing, Arash, is this true, Doc Rivers?
Doc Rivers is a candidate, and I think it'll be very interesting to see the reaction in Los Angeles, certainly from Laker fans. The fact that he was, you know, the former coach of the Celtics when they beat the Lakers, the former coach of the Clippers, two of the more hated teams by the fan base. You know, what would that mean if they got Doc? It's a very interesting situation here, Bonnie. We had it a couple of years ago when they made the hiring of Frank Vogel, where people are trying to figure out, you know, who's actually behind this? Is it Phil Jackson? Is it Kurt Rambis? Is it Linda Rambis? Is Tim Harris involved? What exactly is happening? And to your point, Jay, I mean, you get to five names before you get to Rob Pelinka, who's actually the GM. So, and when you look at the way they handled the hiring of Frank Vogel, they could have had Monty Williams, coach of the year. They could have had Ty Lue, who we know very well, Bonnie Joe, one of the best coaches. They lowballed both of those guys. So now the problem that the Lakers face is around the league and around coaches, a lot of coaches, amazingly, they don't know if they want to take this job. Because sometimes if you don't have a good if you don't have a good season, like if you're just with the Lakers for 1 year and you're below 500, maybe that is your one chance to be a head coach. So there's a lot of people looking around the league who are saying, look at what they did to Frank Vogel. Look at the way that they handled that. Do I want to go to a team, A, that did that to the former coach? And also, B, who's running the ship there? Because normally, if you have a good relationship with the GM, that's all you need. With the Lakers, it seems like you need a good relationship with Jeannie, Linda, Kurt. You know, you go down the list, and it's like, that's ridiculous. So it's an unfortunate situation. But to your question, buddy, Jill, yes, Doc Rivers, from what I've told, is a serious candidate.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, though, right, Arash? Because who is calling those shots?
Well, that's the problem. So, you know, it begins and ends with Jeannie. Now, as you know, Genie has a circle, and so that circle right now includes Magic Johnson, Phil Jackson, Kurt Rambis, Linda Rambis, Tim Harris. There's other people involved, but that is the core group, and I don't think she's going to make a move without getting a consensus with that group. But it's frustrating, I got to imagine, for a GM like Rob Pelinka, who's saying, I'd like to make the hire, because in a good structure, the GM makes the pick, takes the pick to the executives, and the executives generally sign off on it. Why? Because they trust the GM to do their job.
Absolutely. In keeping with the same thing, I don't know, Raj, if you've been watching this HBO Max Winning Time. They announced already that they have renewed it for a second season. Personally, I have only watched one episode because I didn't like the way that they portrayed people that I consider almost family. The way they portrayed Jerry Buss, Jerry West. I mean, Jerry West allegedly is going to be suing HBO and even Chick Hearn. What is your opinion of this show?
I've hated it only because, you know, I was lucky enough, you know, you more so than I obviously got to know a lot of these people, and they've portrayed them in such a caricature way that's not them. They've portrayed them as drunks, as sexist and racist. And listen, they can hide behind the fact that it is a dramatization. They really went to the extent of making it seem real in terms of, you know, going to the forum and the forum club and the uniforms and having people use their real name and casting people that look like Dr. Buss and Jerry West. And so if you go to the extreme of making it seem as real as possible and then you stop short of actually doing your due diligence and saying, what was Jerry West like? What was Dr. Buss like? What was Chick Hearn like? It's embarrassing, and the fact that we know a few people that were a part of the show and quit during the filming because they said, this is not that person. I don't want to be a part of this show.
Yeah, it's funny that it's already gotten renewed. I shouldn't say funny because I think it's the number one cable show right now, Raj. I mean, everyone's watching it, but everyone tells me when they watch it, they Google and see, was that true? Was that true? So it's funny how a lot of people are on the fence about this show.
But, you know, the problem is if you don't know a thing about these people, then you think it's real and you think it's a great show and I've had a good time watching or whatnot. But the fact of the matter is you more so than I and really more so than most knew these individuals as people and you know what you're watching is not true.
Yes, and I it's funny. I boycott the show and I'm trying to tell people not to watch it, but I think I'm not going to win that battle. But Raj, where can fans keep up with you? Tell them your socials and your show as well.
So the Raj Markazi Show on the Mightier 1090, themightier1090.com. We're on every weekday here in Southern California, 12 to 1 Pacific. It turns into a podcast. So, you know, please tune in if you can. But such a pleasure to be on with you. You're one of my favorites. You know that. So can't wait to hang with you soon.
Thank you so much, Raj. You're listening to Sports Night with Bonnie Jill Laughlin on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That was a stretch call for the 148th running of the Kentucky Derby, where 80-1 Rich Strike came out with the win. We are now joined by Brian Corner, Southern California trainer and Breeders' Cup winner, calling us from Santa Anita. Brian, what was your initial reaction after watching the 80-1 long shot Rich Strike win the 148th running of the Kentucky Derby?
Well, it was an amazing stretch drive. The two horses on the lead you thought were going to win the race, and some horse streaking up to the inside and even caught the announcer off guard of who was even coming through. And it was like a mind that bird, you know, replay to me. It was just amazing. You know, as a trainer, it can happen to anybody.
Now, how could a horse with a mediocre form, and I'm looking at this form, and if you had, you know, if you could read, you could see that you wouldn't place any money on him, in the worst position, coming out of the 21 hole, be able to come from the outside and maneuver to the inside for the win? I mean, how does that happen, Brian?
You know, that horse has always showed that he wanted to kind of run on down the lane. You know, the fractions in that race were very fast. He was back there where he needed to be. You know, and he probably ran the race of his life. You know, he peaked at the right time, and everybody else went out there and burned themselves up. And the horse has a lot of grit, as you can see after the race, that the horse has a lot of fight in him, and it worked out. And the rider rode a magnificent race, split horses, and never gave up and rode hard, and they just flew home.
Right. Now, after the race, for those who didn't see, some people might have turned it off, Rich Strike got aggressive, biting the outrider and the pony. A lot of listeners who might not understand the outrider's role, can you first explain what the outrider's responsibility is? Because I don't think some people just have no idea.
Well, I mean, they're for safety on the racetrack. If a horse gets loose or a rider's having a hard time with the horse, they're trying to keep the environment safe in the morning, catch loose horses, and make sure hopefully everybody stays on their horse in the morning. During the Kentucky Derby, I don't know exactly what the protocol is. If they insist that the outrider comes back with the horse, I think it's usually because of an interview. Mm-hmm. I think Greg Blasi got caught off guard when that horse dove after him to take a chunk out of him or his pony. It just put him in a bad situation. He was kind of a victim of not knowing what was going to happen, and he got some backlash in the press, which is, you know, it was just self-defense to him to try to save him and his pony from getting eaten up.
Now, this is, I would say it's somewhat abnormal for a horse to act that crazy hot. I mean, I haven't seen that before, especially during a derby. And we know stallions, studs can act up. But with your long history as a horseman, and you've ponied before a lot of horses, especially racehorses in the morning, first explain the term pony, because some may think it's like a little girl's horse. But also, have you had similar incidents like that has happened, like we saw in the derby?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're not on a pony. We're escorting our horses to the racetrack a lot of times for relaxation, for the horse to feel secure going to the track, getting in his head that going to the racetrack's fun and relaxing and do things the right way, not goofing off, coming off the racetrack, putting the riders in jeopardy of getting bucked off or running into other horses on the track. So we'll pony certain horses around. On the other hand, when you were talking about aggression, I've had several. I had a good horse that won the Vosburgh. He's a grade one horse. His name was Black 17. And he ripped me right off my pony in front of Clocker's Corner one morning here at Santa Anita. He pawed me in the back of the head, and his shoe got caught on my belt and ripped me to the ground. You know, and it's a bad circumstance. And some of those stallions are like that. He was very playful. I don't think he was really out to hurt anybody, but they are stallions and they are aggressive and out to maybe breed another horse or whatnot, but they use their hands and their mouth a lot more than a gelding or most fillies would.
Now, the lead outrider you've been speaking of, Greg Blasi, he's been doing this for 26 years at Churchill, and he's been attacked all over social media and even different media outlets claiming he abused Rich Strike, including Hall of Famer, all-around cowboy Ty Murray. What would you say to that? That people are saying that Greg abused the horse?
Well, I was looking at an article. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But I was looking at an article on Yahoo, and it said nipping at the outrider. There was no nipping involved with that horse when he was with Greg Blasi. That horse was biting to injure him or his pony. And it's just kind of like self-defense. I don't know what you're supposed to do. I mean, they said he was hitting him. I never saw him hit that horse once where that horse even paid attention to what he was doing. You know?
Now, for go on.
And the thing, the Ty Murray remark, I don't know where that comes from. You know, I mean, you're on your horse. The horse comes at you. He bites at your horse. Of course, your horse is going to halfway run away. He's not going to hang in there and get mauled by this other horse. Mm-hmm. And it just, they all kind of got tangled up and it looked bad. I mean, probably the best thing he could have done was just let the horse go and let the rider go ahead and ride him back and just get away from him. But, you know, I think with the interviews and the protocol of the Derby, it kind of put him in that situation is why it escalated to where it did.
Right. Rich Strike's trainer, I don't know if you saw this, Brian, Eric Reed defended Greg Blasi and stated that he saved my horse's life and it could have been a really bad ending. For those who don't know horse racing, what could have happened if Greg Blasi didn't take control of that stud?
Well, like I said, I mean, in the right world, I think he could have just let the horse go. But if he did not defend the horse off him, I mean, the horse could have pawed his horse, you know, put his legs on him or got caught up in his equipment. I mean, different things can happen. You know, not only that, but of Greg Blasi getting just really mangled. I mean, I think he ended up getting stitches as it was.
He did.
You know, and I think, you know, through all this, PETA just wants to be heard and, you know, put out bad press to horse racing because that's what they do. You know, whenever they have a chance to intervene on something, which I don't know, you know, what part of this would have to do with PETA. I mean, he didn't exactly abuse the Kentucky Derby winner or do any harm to him. And, you know, we have to get the backlash.
Now, there's been lots of controversy and rumors even after in the backstretch. And Rich Strike's owner, Rick Dawson, said that Rich Strike will not run in the Preakness, which I think is pretty rare usually unless there's an injury or an illness. A horse usually will run the Preakness. And he mentions that he wanted to stick to the Plan Prix Derby. If he didn't get in the Derby, they were going to run in the Belmont. Well, now he's going to skip the Preakness. When you have a chance to win the Triple Crown as a trainer, Brian, what's going on here?
Well, you know, it's funny that happened because right after that race, I said to who was sitting next to me, I go, they should just wait for the Belmont because that horse had such a stretch drive and the time off will help that horse a lot. And, you know, maybe he came out with a little bruised foot or something that they know might need an extra little time. They need a couple extra days before they get him back to the racetrack. And when you come back in 2 weeks, all that stuff plays into it. You know, if he went off his feet a night or two or whatever, or his weight was a little down, you'd make that judgment probably right away instead of getting caught up in the Triple Crown.
Right, but what happens to the Preakness? Because now there's not much excitement, pretty anticlimactic for the Preakness coming up in 2 weeks.
I don't know. You know, it's still going to be a good horse race. There's, you know, good trainers involved, and they'll still be hype. And then when this horse comes back for the Belmont, everybody hopes he shows up and runs a big race.
Right.
You know,
absolutely.
if he went into the Preakness and flopped right away, well, then the Belmont's not going to be worth anything to anybody. So as far as the excitement goes. So, I mean, you can look at it both ways.
Right. Well, thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. I know you got some runners today. Any tips for us? Anyone for us who are handicapping or been on the race? You got any good tips before we let you go?
I haven't looked at it that close, but I know Mark Glatt's got a couple first time. He has a first timer in the sixth race here that everybody's been talking about a little bit today. So I think that's about all I can come up with. Yeah, he has one first time starter and one coming off the layoff, but they say the first time starter, the 9 horse, could really run. His works have been good.
All right, perfect. Well, thanks, Brian. Good luck with your race at Santa Anita, and hopefully I'll see you at Del Mar.
All righty. Thank you.
Thank you for everyone listening to my first premiere night of Sports Night with Bonnie Jill Laughlin. Until next week, we'll talk to you then. Sports Radio on 810 WHB.